I'd like to say that one of the intentions of putting this presentation together is that our group has a traveling group of speakers, we'd be willing to go across the state. If you can line up presentations, well, I should say if you think that the message that we're getting out today is an important one and would like a similar presentation in your neck of the woods, just let us know and we'll arrange for a presentation in your particular area. One of the things we want to do is spread the news about the importance of this upcoming election. Certainly, Mr. Bradbury has stated a lot of the issues that we're going to be dealing with, but we also want to go into more detail, particularly about some of these election companies and the conflicts of interest associated with them. Just to put things in perspective, there's been a number of surveys, nationwide surveys, that have kind of put in focus the problems associated with the elections in this country. In 2000, a post-election Harris poll estimated that 20 to 30 million Americans did not trust the validity of the presidential results. And before the 2004 election, a poll by the legal website FindLaw.com found that 42% of voters already did not trust the new electronic touchstone voting machines that were coming out. So this is certainly not an issue for a number of activists. This is something that's felt strongly by people across the country. A January 2005 National Annenberg Election Survey interviewed 100,000 voters and found that 30% of American voters, representing over 36 million voters, were not confident their vote had been counted accurately in 2004. And also, the initial results of a survey just completed by Zogby People's Poll in the state of Pennsylvania, surveying Pennsylvania voters commissioned by Op-Ed News, found that the majority of people believe the 2004 election, presidential election, was stolen. Here's some information that's kind of interesting from that poll. We see that when we look at television viewers, we see that high numbers of CNN viewers, 70%, felt that the election was stolen. MSNBC, 65%, CBS, so forth. But when you look at Fox News viewers, only one half of 1% believe that the election was stolen. And that really sends a strong message as far as some of the partisan beliefs associated with this issue. Mr. Bradbury stated that this is not a new issue, and it's also not a partisan issue. After the invention of lever voting machines, Democratic Governor Earl Long of Louisiana once boasted, with the right election commissioners, he could get the machines to sing Home Sweet Home. He also wanted to be buried in the state of Louisiana so he could remain active in politics after his death. So it just kind of shows you that this stuff isn't new. In other election rigging examples, and we put this information in there just to show that this is not a partisan issue. In 1948, Democrat Lyndon Johnson's U.S. Senate victory in Texas over Republican Cove Stevens, earning Lyndon the name Landslide Lyndon. This is a name that Lyndon Johnson wore proudly the rest of his political career. In 2000, Florida Republican Governor Jeb Bush and Secretary of State Katherine Harris disenfranchised felon database. And also, as most of you are aware, some of the shenanigans of Representative Tom DeLay. In 2003, some of the work he did gerrymandering in the state of Texas. All good examples of election rigging. When the American founders developed our democratic framework, one of the things they understood with absolute clarity was that there are some things that we the people do for ourselves, where we the people hold the rights, and these things are known as the commons. The commons include a lot of things that we hold precious, like the public schools, public lands, also services like police and fire department, but also critical things like the water we drink, the air we breathe, and some of the newer technologies, public airwaves, and also, importantly, the internet. As you know, all of these things are currently under attack by privatization with the current administration. And the most precious of all the commons is our voting system. Many say that the voting system, or the vote, is the beating heart of democracy. In a healthy democracy, every citizen's vote is sacred. In a democratic republican form of government such as ours, where people place the political power in the hands of their representatives, voting is the only legitimate way to transfer that power from the people onto the government. So therefore, having an honest and transparent election system for all American citizens is really the cornerstone of our government and our society. The purpose of this presentation is to sound an alarm that our elections and the electorate are no longer under the control of the American people. Partisan politicians are privatizing our local and national election system through the 2002 Help America Vote Act, or HAVA. A little review of the 2000 presidential election. We hate to take you through this fairly painful exercise, but I think it helps to put things in perspective. Election night, November 7th, 2000. For those of you that were awake at 2:16 a.m. on November 8th, Fox News declared the pivotal state of Florida goes for George W. Bush. Minutes later, CBS News, ABC News, CNN News, MSNBC, NBC, all these major organizations came out using Fox's information and said that Florida had gone for Bush. Kind of in the background, what we know now, what we didn't know then, is that Fox News Network, the person at the helm of the election decision team was John Ellis. The election numbers he was working were not official, but the viewers didn't know that. Nor did they know that Ellis was George W. Bush's first cousin. And we also know now that over the course of the evening, Ellis was in phone contact with cousin George W. throughout the election night. 2 hours later, the networks were forced to retract the Florida call for Bush once they realized that the numbers weren't conclusive that Fox News had. However, the strategy was a complete success, creating a lasting impression that Bush had already won the election. And that put them in position, the high ground in that election. We all remember the things like sore loser man, headlines in newspapers and things of that sort. So they worked this strategy very carefully. The next thing we'll talk about is a little overview of the HAVA Act of 2002. On October 29, 2002, with political support on both sides of the aisle, President Bush signed the Help America Vote Act. The stated intent of HAVA was to correct many of the problems that occurred in the 2000 election. So here we're going to fix them. HAVA established the Election Assistance Commission in part to establish a program to provide funds to states to replace punch card voting systems. You can imagine what they replaced them with. And as of December 2005, over $2.3 billion has been invested across the country, including around $28 million in the state of Oregon. HAVA also introduced the provisional ballot. Many people understand that this is very similar to placebo ballots. Individuals shall be permitted to cast a provisional ballot if they present themselves to vote at a polling place in an election for federal office and either don't appear in the official list of eligible voters and also have their eligibility challenged by an election official. So just by having your eligibility challenged, you go to this provisional ballot kind of situation. And there's real strong evidence that of a lot of shenanigans associated with these provisional ballots in the 2004 election. Here's kind of an interesting fact that just emerged in a April 2006 Rolling Stone magazine. Diebold paid over $250,000 to Jack Abramoff's firm, Greenberg Traurig, with the apparent aim of keeping legislation requiring paper ballot trails in the voting process from getting into HAVA. Conveniently, Abramoff's pal Bob May, Republican from Ohio, one of HAVA's architects, blocked every attempt to put paper trails into law. So they put electronic voting machines in place and also invested large sums of money in the lobbying effort to keep this out of these elections. Next thing we'll talk about is the election system. I'll pass it over to Beth.
There are different components of the election systems, but the primary ones are the registered voter records or a database of ballots, of course, a ballot definition files, which are used in electronic systems, and defines how the ballot is set up with the races and the candidates, and then the voting systems and the vote counting systems. And I'm just going to talk about the last two. And I know, at least for me, it was a real revelation to understand that there is the difference between a voting and a vote counting system. As far as the voting systems, of course, again, there's different types. There's a hand-marked paper ballots, and that includes the type that we have here in Oregon with the optical scan systems, the lever machines, punch cards, and electronic voting machines. And even though the punch cards are getting a bum rap these days, they are a paper ballot. As far as vote counting systems, the types are the hand counting, which are few and far between anymore, and electronic tabulators. These electronic tabulators are centrally located, usually at like the county elections office or something. And the optical scan system is kind of a combination of paper ballot and electronics, because while we do have the paper ballot, they are still counted by electronic tabulators. And just an overview of the technologies used in the 2004 election, you can see that over 99% of the votes or ballots that were counted in 2004, over 99% were counted by electronic ballot across the country, electronic tabulator, and less than 1% were counted by hand. Now, all electronic election systems, including electronic voting, such as touch screens, or what they call the DREs, direct recording electronic, I believe, and the optical scan systems, currently use proprietary undisclosed software, which is tantamount to secret vote counting. There is no government or public examination of the software for inaccurate or malicious code. Again, there is no oversight on the software that goes into counting our ballots. This is just kind of a graph of the optical scan voting system, and you can see you have your paper ballot that you fill out, and of course then it goes into they're fed into the tabulator, the scanners, the machines, and the data from the machines then goes to another machine that either tabulates and or compiles the votes. And the optical scan machines also have the ballot definition files that read how the ballots are supposed to be counted. So essentially, there are some electronics involved, and the potential may exist for undetectable hacking and tampering with election results in the database. And we'll go into that more a little later. So what's the big controversy about these electronic election systems? Well, actually, there's numerous studies and test demonstrations that have shown that the current electronic election systems with their secret software, including our optical scan systems, can be easily and undetectably hacked. New tests and demonstrations come out almost monthly about new problems they found with these systems, and it's pretty scary what we're finding out about them. And they're at every level of the machine. It's not just... Some people say, oh, they're not hooked up to the internet, we're fine. That's not always the issue. There's many, many ways that they can be infiltrated. But you say, well, okay, well, who opposes these systems? A bunch of quacks or, whatever. But essentially, no. It's computer scientists who are the ones who have been leading the fight against these electronic voting machines and tabulators with their secret software. And these scientists include people such as Dr. Abby Rubin of Johns Hopkins, Dr. Rebecca Mercury of Harvard, and Dr. David Dill of Stanford. And there's many others, too, who are also leading the fight. So it's not just a bunch of quacks who don't know what they're talking about. So who would you rather believe as to are these machines secure or not? Would you rather believe the private for-profit vendors with close ties to a political party and possibly a foreign government? Or would you rather believe computer scientists and computer security experts who are saying these machines should not be trusted? But now, let me emphasize, though, that criticism of these electronic election systems is not a criticism of our election officials and workers, at least not here in Oregon. We have found that the elections officials here in Oregon have a high degree of integrity, and And their job is to ensure that elections are conducted properly. The problems we're talking about, as far as the electronic systems, are problems that are beyond their control. So, but who owns these companies now? Well, according to spokesman, just a review of the oversight. According to official spokesmen from the U.S. Election Assistance Commission and the Election Justice Department, there is no federal agency with regulatory authority over the elections industry. There are no government standards or restrictions on who can sell or service these machines. And there is no agency or organization that even has a complete list of voting machine companies in the U.S. So in other words, there is no government oversight of the systems or the software, and the vendors are policing themselves. Now, the top three companies in the U.S. you may have heard of, ESNS, Diebold, and Sequoia. And ESNS and Diebold together tabulate about 80% of the votes. Sequoia is a big manufacturer of voting machines, and they currently have about a third of the market on electronic voting machines. Now, ESNS, a little background on the company, it was initially founded in 1980 under the name of American Information Systems, and it was founded by a couple brothers, Bob and Ted Yurosevich. And in 1999, their company, ASI, then evolved into what's now ESNS. When they started ASI, half of the startup money they got came from millionaires William and Howard Amundson, Jr. Okay, so who's a Howard Amundson Jr.? Just some guy who wants to start a company and make money. Well, it's a little more than that. He's a Christian Reconstructionist, or Dominionist, as they're commonly called. And he stated in the Orange County Register newspaper his goal of replacing constitutional law in the U.S. with biblical law. Now, this is not just Howard Amundson Jr. This is a stated goal of the Dominionists, to replace our Constitution with biblical law. He has openly advocated a radical plan for the theocratic takeover of America. He's currently a member of the ultra-right-wing Council for National Policy, and he provides millions of dollars to causes that are trying to do away with the teaching of Darwin's theory of evolution and instead implement what they call intelligent design. Again, this is the man who's financially backing our voting machine systems. But the Yurosevich brothers are still active. Bob Yurosevich is president of Diebold. Ted is the vice president of ESNS. And during the 2004 elections, their two companies counted about 80% of the vote across the country. Now, when Bob left ESNS to go to Diebold, he was replaced at ESNS by Chuck Hagel, who is, of course, now the U.S. Senator from Nebraska. However, before he was senator, in 1995, Hagel was running ESNS, which was the company that would count the votes in his 96th bid for the U.S. Senate. He was trailing substantially in the polls against his opponent, who was former Governor Ben Nelson, and Hagel was running at 18%. Somehow, however, he came from behind to win with an amazing 56% of the vote. He was also the first Republican Senate winner in the state in 24 years, and in both the 96 and 2002 elections, ESNS counted 85% of the votes in Nebraska. Pretty handy. Senator Hagel still retained a $1 to $5 million ownership in ESNS's parent company, McCarthy Group, as he contemplates a run for the presidency in 2008. Diebold has a lot of influence also. In the 2004 election, they counted approximately 50% of the votes in 30 states. And one of their former CEOs, Wally O'Dell, he was a CEO in August in 2003. He was also a major donor to the Bush campaign. Well, in August 2003, he sent out a memo and invited 100 wealthy fellow partisans to a fundraiser at his mansion in Ohio. and his invitation stated in writing, "I am committed to helping Ohio deliver its electoral votes to the president next year." Well, he eventually resigned in December 2005 after whistleblower allegations that Diebold may have mishandled elections in Georgia and Ohio in 2004. Of course, that does nothing to counter the results of the elections. Prior to the 2004 election, Diebold also employed five convicted felons as senior managers and software developers to help write central compiler code that counts the votes. They employed felons to help count, to develop the software to count our votes. They can't vote, but yeah. Yeah. Well, one of those convicted felons was Jeff Dean. He was a senior vice president and senior programmer on their central compiler code program. Prior to being hired by Diebold, Dean had been convicted on 23 counts of felony theft in the first degree. Now, what he had been convicted of was planting back doors in his software using a high degree of sophistication to evade detection while stealing $500,000 over a period of 2 years. And he was so bad, the judge at the sentencing said that Dean was never supposed to handle public money again. But I guess handling our votes is okay. But when word of his shady past kind of began to surface, Diebold thought, well, maybe we better demote him. And so they put him in a consultant status and replaced him with a guy by the name of John Elder. Well, it turns out that Dean and Elder knew each other from prison. Because Elder had been convicted of cocaine trafficking. And Elder is now managing, or at least went on to manage, a Diebold division responsible for printing election ballots and punch cards. Sequoia, the other large company, began as American Voting Machine under the control of Stockholders and Rockwell, which is a major defense contractor. They too have a rather shady past. Their founder and CEO eventually went to resign and went to prison for bribing Buffalo and New York election officials. The next guy in line, Lewis Wolfson, was subsequently convicted of bribing Supreme Court Justice Abe Fortas. And then after that, we have Phil Foster and Rocco Ricci, who were convicted on charges for bribing Louisiana commissioners of elections and paying $8 to $10 million over a 10-year period. Again, outstanding citizens. And Sequoia's parent company is now a company called Smartmatic International. And it turns out it's owned by Venezuelans with close ties to Hugo Chavez. Some people may find this objectionable. But discovering the ownership of Sequoia was not easy, and Illinois officials were the ones digging into it. And it took them tracing it through four countries, two hemispheres, and three shell corporations just to find out who owned Sequoia. So in other words, in addition to no oversight of the software and machines, there's also no standards on who can own these voting machine companies. They don't have to be U.S. companies. Now, Triad is a smaller company, but it played a key role in the 2000-2004 elections in both Florida and Ohio. You might remember controversies in those states. Owner Todd Rapp is also a generous donor to the Republican Party, as well as to George Bush's campaign. One of the reasons we mention it today is because he's also president of the CFOS Corporation, which is a Triad affiliate, which supplied the notorious butterfly ballot in Florida in the 2000 election. Some of you may remember the stories of the butterfly ballot. Well, if you want one, you can go to their website and get a commemorative butterfly ballot for just $59.95. So it was rather prophetic when Peter King, representative from New York, was interviewed by Alexandra Pelosi for her documentary. And she's making a documentary on a political campaign called Diary of a Political Tourist. And she interviewed him on film, and King exulted, "It's already over. The election's over. We won." So she asked him how he knew it was already answered, how she knew they already won. And he answered, it's all over but the county, and we'll take care of the county. This was in summer of 2003. So why is Karl Rove so boldly predicted the Republican dynasty for the next 40 years? Now, the entire state of Oregon uses optical scan election systems, which is a real benefit for us. At least we do, as Secretary Bradbury says, we do have paper ballots, and the optical scan system is one of the better systems to be using as far as the choices. But 98% of Oregon's votes were tabulated or counted on machines manufactured by AIS, BRC, ESNS, and Sequoia. So we do not have Diebold. A lot of people say, oh, we're safe, we don't have Diebold. Yeah, but we have the others. And I didn't talk about BRC, but BRC was initially started by the Texas family, the Hunt, an oil family who, as I understand, were strong opponents of FDR's New Deal and doing everything they can to get rid of the New Deal programs. So, turn it back to Terry.
I'm always the historian here. We're taking a little walk through the 2004 presidential election problems. Really at the center in the state of Ohio was Kenneth Blackwell, Ohio's Secretary of State, during the 2004 election, very similar to Catherine Harris. He was also the co-chair of the state's Bush re-election campaign, as Catherine Harris was back in 2000. And it just seems like all the time when these key states come up like this, they have their people positioned properly. Blackwell's actions, we know now, resulted in the suppression and disenfranchisement of well over 100,000 voters in the state of Ohio. Here's kind of a laundry list of the things that he was involved with. In September 2004, all county board of elections were ordered to reject all voter registration forms not printed on white, uncoated paper of less than 80-pound test weight. The Cleveland Plain Dealer had included a form in their newspaper. Many, many thousands of people filled out that form and sent it in, and Mr. Blackwell wanted to reject those. He also limited the use of provisional ballots, effectively disenfranchising over 100,000 citizens. And this is according to Ohio's Republican Governor Bob Taft, by using a narrow interpretation of HAVA requirements. He also provided insufficient numbers of voting machines. Secretary Bradbury talked about this. Here's a kind of an image from the state of Ohio. And like he mentioned, these were often in areas that had more minorities, were less affluent, and primarily Democratic areas. And people had to wait upwards of 10 hours for the opportunity to vote. And a lot of these poor people couldn't afford to take that amount of time off. We just wonder how many people left those lines because of these conditions, these rainy conditions and the amount of time. Also, some additional problems on November 2nd. He banned all press and exit pollsters from Ohio's voting places, arranged Ohio's post-election recount schedule so as to leave no time for adequate recounts, and also is yet to file a compliance report with the governor's service administration, which had given him $41 million to enforce HAVA in the state of Ohio. And as most of you know, he's now a Republican candidate for Ohio governor. There's also some indication from news reports that we gathered that there were a number of break-ins that happened prior to the 2004 election. In July, a consulting firm employed by the Ohio Democratic Party was broken into, and also in October of 2004, Lucas County Democratic headquarters in Toledo were broken into. And here's some images that we found from a Toledo newspaper showing what was done in these break-ins, and it was basically go in, get the computers, and get out. The only items that were taken were computers with highly sensitive information. And for the most part, the information was specific to people that they knew were going to vote for Kerry. And a lot of stories emerged afterwards about removal of Democrats from the rolls. In fact, in the Republican Chair Bob Bennett in the Cuyahoga Board of Elections and Chair of the Ohio Republican Party has confirmed that prior to the 2004 election, his Board of Elections eliminated 175,000 voters from the Cleveland area voter registration roll. We find about this later, what was happening in the other counties in the state of Ohio. And the Republicans also used a technique called caging. Many of you are probably aware of this, where they sent registered letters to newly registered voters in minority and urban areas and then challenged the voting eligibility of 35,000 individuals who refused to sign for the letter or if the mail came back undeliverable. Large numbers disenfranchised there as well. A key thing to point out is that in Ohio, the final machine tally showed George Bush had 118,000 votes more than John Kerry. A lot of people think that that is too many votes to have this thing flip. But when you look at it, it's simply an average of less than 6 votes per precinct. And when you look at the numbers of disenfranchised, all the dirty tricks associated with it, it looks to be a fairly orchestrated effort that occurred in the state. These examples are just the tip of the iceberg of documented voter suppression and disenfranchisement, dirty tricks used in Ohio and several other states in the 2004 election. So these tricks weren't just happening in the state of Ohio, they were happening across the country. Now let's take a look at exit polls.
There's been a lot of controversy about the exit polls. And just to kind of review, the official exit poll for the 2004 election was done by Matosky International, and they were assisted by Edison Media Research. And Matosky International is a well-known, an internationally known firm. They were hired by the National Election Pool, which was a consortium of all the major news organizations. So they were not hired by the campaigns or by the public, they were hired by the news media. And again, a bad trip on memory lane. Late afternoon of election day on 2004, you may remember that the exit polls showed that Kerry was well ahead by 3% in the popular vote. And it also showed that he was winning by a landslide in the electoral votes. Well, during the late evening, you may remember, there all of a sudden was a flip. The machine tallies showed George Bush was the victor in both the popular and the electoral votes. It was a stunning last-minute turnaround. Now, how did this happen? Well, this is a graph, just to kind of go over it quickly. This shows the exit polls and the machine tallies. The center line here is zero. This is positive, and this is negative. The dashed lines are the exit polls. These are machine tallies. Kerry is blue, Bush is red. So this blue line here shows Kerry is ahead in the exit polls by 2.5% to 3% up to the election. The red line shows at 5 p.m. Eastern time, Bush is ahead by about 11% in the machine tallies. And what a lot of people don't know is that about 11 o'clock p.m., the computer server capturing the data, the election data nationwide, in Matosky Edison headquarters, the server mysteriously went down. It was down for about 2.5 hours. When it came back up, you can see how the results flipped. It was about a 5.5% flip in favor of Bush. This is another graph that shows 11 battleground states and what happened there. The first set of bars are the exit polls. The second set are machine tallies for each state. So what it shows is Kerry was at about, 47% exit polls, but the machine tallies showed him much less. Bush, in the red, His machine tallies were quite a bit higher than his exit polls. If you kind of look closely, that's kind of a general trend. Even in states like Minnesota, where Kerry carried the state, the machine tallies were less than the exit polls. What it looks like is they were shaving votes off of Kerry's and padding them to Bush's in almost every state, especially the critical battleground states. And it was especially done in these states with the most electoral votes. This is another graph that shows the red shift, which is the greatest discrepancy between exit poll results and the tabulated results, always went in favor of the Republicans, in favor of Bush. So that's called a red shift. the redshift was greatest in the five critical states with the most electoral votes. I doubt that's a coincidence. Now, the explanation for the discrepancy, as I'm sure you've all heard, is that, well, exit polls, aren't accurate, and, they've always been flawed. And this was being, advocated by the media and all these political pundits. Historically, however, exit polls have proven to be very accurate, often to within 0.5%. And discrepancies between the exit polls and the final vote counts has always been solid evidence that something in the election results is wrong. Whether it's the machines were wrong, whether it's the, a hand count was inaccurate, or something was wrong. Even the Bush administration considered exit polls to be reliable as a way to expose large-scale fraud. And they've even helped pay for exit polls in other countries to make sure the elections come out the way that they're supposed to. In fact, right after our election in November 2004, Ukraine had a presidential election. And they had the exact same thing. The exit poll showed one result, and the final machine tally showed something else. However, what happened in Ukraine was Ukrainians got out by the hundreds of thousands in sub-freezing cold temperatures and protested, and they got a new election and a different presidential winner. The official explanation for the discrepancy, however, in the 2004 presidential election, as stated in the official Edison-Matovsky report, was that more Kerry supporters participated in the exit poll. Perhaps you've all heard of this. Oh, it was just that more Kerry supporters participated. Well, Dr. Jerry Adams over here actually read the technical section of the report and found that their information in the technical section actually contradicts that conclusion. And their analysis also made the assumption that the machine tallies were correct. Their analysis did not consider the possibility that the machine tallies were incorrect and that the exit polls were correct. To date, the official final exit poll data has not been released to the public because, again, they say it belongs to the, it's private property that belongs to the media, who are the ones that hire them. Now, according to computer security expert Chuck Herron, the sudden unreliability of exit polls coincides, funny enough, with a paperless electronic voting machines. But the discrepancies in the 2004 election were not just in the presidential race. There were also some substantial discrepancies in as many as 7 U.S. Senate races. And again, they were all in favor of the Republican candidate. In every case, the discrepancies were in favor of the Republican candidate. In the U.S. Senate races in 2004, those included Jim Bunning of Kentucky, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Richard Burr, North Carolina, Mel Martinez of Florida, Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, John Thune of South Dakota, and Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. It also goes back to 2002 when there were some strange anomalies in U.S. Senate races in Georgia and Minnesota. In Georgia, Saxby Chambliss won over incumbent Max Cleland with a 12% swing in the votes. And Norm Coleman beat Walter Mondale with an 11% swing. And paperless electronic voting machines were used in both of these states in those elections. In 2002-2003, there were also a couple suspicious gubernatorial races. In Georgia in 2002, Sonny Perdue defeated the incumbent Democratic governor after a 16% election day swing. And Arnold Schwarzenegger defeated the popular Latino Democrat in California. Of course, California is a heavily Democratic state. And Arnold Schwarzenegger defeated the popular Latino Democrat who was substantially leading just prior to the election. And again, paperless electronic voting machines were used in those states. Now, as far as U.S. House races, we don't have any information as to any discrepancies in U.S. House races simply because there is no information available. But there's nothing to also suggest that that nothing was wrong with those races either. In Oregon, yes, we feel confident that we have a pretty good system here. However, we have no basis for confidence in the results that are based on machine counts that were tallied with secret software. And one thing I wanted to bring up is Secretary Bradbury was talking about all the efforts to, you know, have ID, voter ID, you know, your passport or your birth certificate or whatever. There's sometimes people don't realize the difference between voter fraud and election fraud. All these efforts that are against, you know, illegal immigrants voting or requiring voter ID, all these efforts, that's based on voter fraud. They're trying to stop voter fraud. Well, voter fraud is fraud perpetuated by the individual voters, such as voting more than once. As Secretary Bradbury pointed out, some of these things are felonies. If you're an illegal immigrant, voting is a felony. If you vote more than once, it's a felony. Voter fraud is very small scale. Election fraud, however, is fraud perpetrated by others, such as candidates or groups with political agendas or ideologies, and is sometimes with help from election officials. And it is often large scale. So which type of fraud do you think has been occurring? What do you think we should be focusing our efforts on?
Is this a trick question?
Just want to make sure you're paying attention.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, now let's kind of fast forward to the 2006 midterm elections. An interesting report has just come out back in 2005, a General Accounting Office report. And what it said is that electronic voting system security and reliability identified a long list of vulnerabilities and problems associated with these with the voting system. Problems such as weak security controls, system design flaws, inadequate security testing, and a whole long laundry list of problems. This is a government agency looking at the election system. In the 2004 election, people felt calmed by the illusion that the problems of the 2000 election had been resolved with the Help America Vote Act. Well, in fact, the opposite was happening. The 2000 GAO report states that although the Election Assistance Commission has led efforts to address problems, changes have not been implemented. Therefore, there will be little improvement in the 2000 election over the 2004 election. The only thing, but for most part, that they've done is address individual problems associated with individual voters and not looked at some of these big systemic problems that are occurring. Kind of the real upsetting news is that we know all this money was invested across the country for electronic voting machines. If you remember back in the 2004 election, 30% people voted on these types of paperless electronic voting machines. In the 2006 election, 40% of all voters will cast their ballots on these types of machines, 66 million voters across the country. And more than 30.6 million voters will see new voting equipment used for the first time. As you can imagine, with new voting equipment, a lot of problems are a result. So how can we address these problems? Here's some questions that we'd like to throw out. Can we, the people, afford to ignore the strong evidence of systematic election fraud in the last three federal election cycles? Can we trust private companies like ESNS, Diebold, and Sequoia to accurately count our votes?
No.
Can we ignore the estimated 36 million voters who were not confident that their vote in 2004 election had been counted or counted accurately?
No.
Do we believe that the upcoming elections are going to be any different than what we've seen in the past, unless we do something to address these problems? We the people need to take action in order to reclaim the common right to an open, transparent, and verifiable election system, to reclaim our vote in our democracy. Some of the things that we need to do: demand that corporations and politicians get the heck out of counting our votes. Why do we have corporations between us and how our votes are counted? Develop open source election software for transparency. Currently, these proprietary software packages can't be examined. They are owned by the company. It also uses scientifically designed independent election verification process. Very important things. We as individuals need to support nonpartisan election integrity efforts, become more informed about the facts, help raise awareness about the need for election reform, and also ask your elected officials to support election reform that's very well needed. Also, most importantly, become and stay politically engaged and active. And we also have to make sure in this upcoming election that we don't let another questionable election go unchallenged in this country. So, in wrapping up, if you want more information about this issue and kind of keep up to date on how news is breaking, come and look at our website. The next thing I'd like to do is pass it over to Jerry Adams for a little discussion about specific information about election integrity.
Okay, you need it.
If you'd like to stand up or whatever, you've been sitting there a long time, go ahead. And how many of you found some new information out of this, or was this pretty much everybody knew it? New? Most of you? Okay, most of you. So my piece of this is to talk a little bit about what to do.
Okay, wow, that long. Okay.
So the majority of the efforts of the Oregon Voter Rights Coalition has been towards what to do about it. We basically, after a very short period of time, found pieces of this which we thought were enough to cause us to be upset and needing to do something. And so we've spent the time since November really trying to come up with very practical, specific things to do. Do any of you have ideas of what specifically to do? Yeah.
Start our own company, design something where the source code is escrow. The source code is escrow. Machines are secure and easy to use.
Okay.
And pass the Nevada test for gambling machines. Because the small motor companies weren't able to pass that test. If we can do that, then we can build a better machine that will do the job better and verify it.
Okay, what would you suggest for 2006? Because that probably can't happen that quickly.
Well, you're right. So that we're just going to have to keep hammering the point home.
Okay, we disagree with that. We have some other ideas. Yes?
We could all have, everybody nails it in, across the country, FTF. FTF. Everybody,
But the vote still gets counted by the electronic machines. Once they're all in, the electronic machines take over. You had an idea?
Well, you know, years ago, I worked on the Wayne County elections, and the Secretary of State used to come down, and they'd run their test bit through our counting facility, and boy, they'd come up with the right number. They kind of, you know, locked down the data center, and we weren't allowed access to them after.
Okay, so that gets into this. Right now in Oregon, there are tests, there are efforts to keep it secure, there are efforts to keep the machines secure, and they do accuracy and logic and accuracy tests, which is they run a test deck. They'll take 1,000 ballots and hand do them, then they'll run it through the machine to make sure that the machine counts the same. And many election officials feel like that's really sufficient. And that takes care of the electronic side of it. Does anybody see why that doesn't do that? Does anybody? Yes.
Because they can have the machine set up with an app for the ballot.
Exactly. And that's what we think is happening. Exactly. So what we're trying to do right now is a couple of things. One is to have a common language so that we're talking the same way when we talk to people who are working in this field. There's a logic and accuracy test, which is what you just mentioned, which a lot of election officials do, and they feel like they've handled the electronic fraud issue. Again, if it's over, if there's software in there, it can flip it after the 1,000, which is what we think it does, and so it doesn't do anything for anything beyond 1,000. Number two, audit of precincts. That's being proposed in a Bill 550. Some of you have probably heard about it, and it's suggesting an audit of 2% of precincts, an IRS-type audit, where it'll do 100% count of the votes, hand count, independent of the electronic. The problem with that is, that's a good thing to do, the problem is it won't tell you who won the election or who lost. 2% of precincts has no bearing on who won or who lost. Mathematically, statistically, it has no bearing. So that's a good idea. It's a nice thing to do, but it won't tell us who won or lost. You can't contest the election. It's sort of like a so what, because, okay, this machine miscounted, that one miscounted. It doesn't affect the election. The third one, this is what we're working on very heavily, and we would actually like it implemented in 2006. This is an independent hand count to say exactly who won with a 1% level of accuracy or less or more.
Hand count of what?
A hand count of the paper ballots. And the problem in part is 40% of the votes won't have it. So for where it can be done, and that would be in perhaps the largest, if we can do it, at least 100 large counties in the United States in 2006. That's our next move in part. Yes, Beth?
Hand count a sample.
Hand count a sample so that it isn't like the audit of precincts, but it would actually tell you who won at the county level. And those counties often are, well, like here, we've got two counties, and that's, you know, a third of the whole state would be two counties, as an example. So if you get two or three counties in a lot of states, you've got a fairly huge amount of the vote, and you know whether there's a problem. And then, of course, recount means a hand count, full paper hand count. And so people are using all those terms all over the place, mixing them up, and so it's very difficult to communicate. So, this is a little... Yes, go ahead.
There's a bigger strategic issue involved here for coming elections. I think it's titled this deliberation. If California goes Republican, it doesn't matter who runs for president, to be honest with you. So my question is, and I think a lot of this has to do with the election kind of things, if that kind of thing takes hold in California, maybe you already has. That's a huge strategic issue. And I wondered whether you guys, or say Laura, is working on a similar organization in California.
Yes, we are. We're working closely with California.
Yeah. And what's making you look at that
picture? I'm going to require paper.
The law requires it, but then there's the implementation.
Yeah.
Yes?
I had a couple questions that came up on this one, which is how come the governor just said you can't have effective polls? I mean, that just up to the state. Second of all, when fraud is suspected or detected, is there not any recourse in terms of laws?
There is that, and again, we're working with California. And basically, here's the situation. You're there, you got a bunch of people observing, and you're seeing that the clerk in California, Los Angeles, just as a wild thing, not that it happened, says, well, we're not going to follow the rules, we're going to go in a room, we're going to do this thing, and then we'll come back out and we'll tell you what happened. Well, that's illegal, so what are you going to do about it? And so, as a very practical matter, here's what we're moving towards. One, in terms of the transparency, we want gigantic presence at the actual balloting places with webcams and that kind of thing. We're trying to organize a national connection so that we can know exactly what's going on. And if someone were to do something that I just said, it would be all over the country, all over the world. I mean, we would be there watching it happen. The way it was, they were there, there were no cameras, it was just someone doing it. And that's what's been happening all over the country. As a practical matter, yes, it's illegal. So what are you going to do about it? And in fact, in many cases, the county people know the law enforcement. And so it's a very difficult thing, but if you've got it on camera and the person, you know, smile, I didn't quite get that, you're not in the light, would you say that again? It's a little different. Because if we can connect it nationally, And we can say, okay, in Los Angeles County, this just happened. Would you get to the phone right now, or would you email right now the governor, or this or that? Or we have a specific strategy in mind. That's one piece of it. A second piece is we have to have an exit poll type activity. You notice Zogby is one of the people who does exit poll and popularity polls and things like that. He is working with a number of us, and we're going to try to, at a very fraction of the normal cost, do the exit poll thing. And we need your support on that. We need you to contact, for those in here, we need you to contact your local county clerks and your county commissioners and tell them you want independent verification. Not logic and accuracy tests, that's great, but independent verification so that we know at a state level who won. And they need to know that you care. Part of the reason that they say that they don't want to, or they're not going to do this, is nobody cares. It's like, you guys, you know, you're a little small group of whatever. And so one of the things that has to happen now is a broad sense of caring. So tell everybody you know, contact the county clerks, contact the county commissioners, and say you want independent verification. Yes, we know it's paper ballots. Yes, we know you do logic and accuracy tests. We think you have high integrity, but we don't trust the machines, and you're using those machines, and you don't know what those machines do.
Jared,
yes.
Just two quick points.
Go ahead.
What happens in other states is up to other states. We can encourage and we are active nationally in terms of, you know, conversing with them. But every state's problem is so unique, they often look at Oregon with envy because they're still battling this 40% of not even having ballots. So, you know, friends in other states, contact them, get them encouraged to involve in their local election groups, and they're in just about every state. Number two, the countywide or statewide verification process is a process by which, if there's problems detected, it would trigger an automatic full recount. That's the critical thing, because in Ohio, when they tried to do the 2% precinct, it's like, well, what do we do now? They did nothing. Nothing changed. But if we get this affected into law, there's problems, the election results will be based on the hand count.
And we're working with the Oregon legislature, and we will contact you soon because we want a law through that will, in fact, in Oregon, make the countywide and statewide verification law.
Thank you, guys. On your feet for the Oregon Voter Rights Coalition.